"You should be well content, wanderer," Anlor said to Taran, who had remained silent all the while. "You saved honest folk, their lives and homes." "Drudwas told me I was no stranger, but a friend. For that I am glad," Taran answered. "I only wish," he added, "that I weren't a stranger to myself." "What use am I?" he burst out. "To myself, to anyone, none that I can see."
"The folk of Issaf would gainsay you," the potter answered, "and there might be others who would welcome a stout blade and a bold heart."
"A hired sword," Taran replied bitterly, "and follow the same way as Dorath." He shook his head. "When I was a child, I dreamed of adventure, glory, of honor in feats of arms. I think now that these things are shadows."
"If you see them as shadows, then you see them for what they are," Anlor agreed. "Many have pursued honor, and in the pursuit, lost more of it than ever they could gain. But I did not mean a hired sword."
He stopped abruptly and was thoughtful a moment.
"To see them for what they are," he murmured, returning to his first words. Perhaps...
The potter looked closely at Taran.
"The Comet Law tells how one may see himself for what he is, whether it be true or no more than an old wives' tale. I will not judge," the potter went on slowly. "But the law says that he who would know himself need only gaze in the mirror of Lunat."
Though Anlor had spoken quietly, Taran heard the potter's words like a thunderclap.
"The mirror of Lunat!" Taran cried.
Since leaving Craddock's valley, he had put away all thought of the mirror, hidden and forgotten it, and the days had covered it as dead leaves on a burial mound.
"The mirror!" he repeated in a stifled voice. "The goal of my quest from the beginning. I had given up searching. Now do I find it, when I seek it least of all?"
"Your quest?" Anlor said, perplexed.
He had risen and was watching Taran with concern.
"Of this you have told me nothing, wanderer."
"I would have no pride in the telling," Taran replied. But now, as Anlor listened quietly, a look of kindness on his face, little by little, Taran was able to speak of Caer Dalban, of Ordu, of where the quest had led him, of Craddock's death and his own despair. "Once," Taran concluded, "I would have asked nothing better than to find the mirror. Now, even if it were in my hand, I would dread to look in it."
"I understand your fears," the potter answered quietly. "The mirror may put your heart at ease, or trouble you all the more. Such is the risk. The choice must be yours." "But know this, wanderer," Anlor went on, as Taran bit his lips in silence. "It is not such a mirror as you think. It lies close by here in the Lorgaten Mountains, no more than 2 days' distance, in a cave at the head of the Lake of Lunat. The mirror of Lunat is a pool of water."
"A pool of water?" Taran cried.
"What enchantment gives it power? For enchanted it must be."
"It is," answered the potter, "to those who deem it so."
"What of yourself?" Taran asked in a low voice. "Have you sought to look in it?"
"That I have not," replied Anlor, "for I well know who I am, Anlor Clayshaper. For better or worse, that knowledge must serve me my lifetime."
"And I," Taran murmured, "what knowledge will serve mine?" He said nothing for a time. At last he raised his head. "It is true. I fear to look in the mirror, and fear to know what it might tell me. But I have already known shame," he flung out bitterly. "Must I know cowardice as well?" "In the morning," Taran continued, "in the morning I journey to the mirror of Lunat." His decision gave him little comfort. At first light, as he and Gurgi saddled their mounts, his doubts chilled him more than the cold mist of late autumn. Nevertheless, having made his choice, he set a swift pace, riding northward from Merin to the Lorgaden Mountains, taking his bearings on the high peak of Mount Meladin, for it was at the foot of Meladin, as Anlor told him, that he would find the cave. The companions rode silently and steadily, halting only when the day had so far waned they could no longer guide the steeds along the paths. They camped on the soft carpet of pine needles, but a deep uneasiness had settled on the two wayfarers, and they slept little. At dawn of the next day, they gathered up their gear and rode at a good pace along the crest of a ridge. Soon, Taran called out and pointed downward. The Lake of Lunet stretched in a long oval, gleaming in the early sun. Its waters were calm, blue, and the lake itself seemed a perfect mirror that held the tree-lined shore in its depths. At some distance, Mount Meladin rose, tall, but seeming almost weightless in the mist still clinging to its long slopes. Taran's heart beat faster as the companions made their way downward to the shore. Closer to Meladin, the land fell in sharp drops, and short stretches of meadow broke into shallow ravines. Near a stream, tumbling from the upper reaches of the mountain, the companions tethered their steeds. Taran had already sighted the cave, and hastened toward it, with Gurgi scrambling after him. "There," Taran cried, "there, the mirror!" At the foot of Meladin, wind and weather had carved an arching cave, little more than a few paces deep. Rivulets trickled from the moss-grown rocks of its overhanging brow. Taran raced toward it. His heart pounded, his pulse burnt in his wrists. Yet as he drew closer, his pace slowed, and fear weighed heavy as a chain about his legs. At the mouth of the cave, he halted a long moment. Gurgi glanced anxiously at him. "It is here," Taran murmured. He stepped forward. Within, a shallow basin hollowed in the floor of smooth stones, lay the mirror of Lunet, like a shield of polished silver, gleaming of itself despite the shadows. Taran slowly knelt at the rim. The basin held no more than a finger's depth of water, fed, drop by drop, from a thread of moisture twining down the rocky wall. The passing of countless years had not filled it to the brim, yet shallow though it was, the water seemed a depthless crystal whose facets turned one upon the other, each catching brilliant beams of white. Scarcely daring to breathe, lest he trouble the shining surface, Taran bent closer. The cave was utterly silent, and it seemed that even the falling of a wisp of dry moss would shatter the reflection. His hands trembled as he saw his own face, travel-worn and sun-scorched. With all his heart, he longed to turn away, but forced himself to look more deeply. Were his eyes playing tricks on him? Closer he knelt. What he saw made him cry out in disbelief. At the same instant, Gurgi shrieked in terror. Taran leapt to his feet and spun around as Gurgi ran and cowered at his side. Before him stood Dorath. The man's face was stubble-bearded, his dirty yellow hair hung into his eyes. The horsehide jacket was slashed along one side, and mud crusted his boots. In one hand he held food, which he scooped up with his fingers and crammed into his mouth. He grinned at Taran.
"Well met, Lord Swineherd,"
Dorath said between mouthfuls. "Ill met, Dorath," Taran cried, drawing his sword.
"Will you call your company to set upon us? Call them, then, all who fled us at Comet Isav."
He raised the weapon and strode forward. Dorath laughed harshly.
"Will you strike before my own blade is out? Draw it, then," Taran flung back at him. "So I shall, when my meal is done,"
Dorath said. He gave a scornful grunt.
"Your blade is ill-favored, swineherd, uglier than Gloff's face."
He grinned slyly.
"Mine is the fairer weapon, yet gained at no cost. My company," he added, "would you have me call them? They are deaf, for half of them. The dirt of their graves stops their ears. I saw you at Isav, and guessed it was you who ratted the comet clods. Alas, I had no time to linger and pay my greetings to you."
Dorath wiped his mouth on the back of his hand.
"Of those who rode from Isav, two cowards fled, and I've seen none of them. Two were heavily wounded. Those are myself sped on their journey to the Carrion Crows, and they burden me no longer. But no matter, I'll soon find others to join me. Meantime, so much the better," he went on. "I'll share your treasure with none but myself."
treasure?" Taran cried. "There is no treasure. Draw your blade, Doreth, or I'll kill you unarmed as you'd have done to me."
"An end to your lying, swineherd," Doreth growled. "Do you still take me for a fool? I've known of your travels, and the bent path you followed here did not deceive me. Your saddlebags hold nothing of worth. I've seen that for myself. So the prize is yet to be claimed."
He strode to the mirror.
"Is this your trove? What have you found, swineherd? A mud puddle? What does it hide?"
Taran cried out, though before he could fling himself upon Doreth, the warrior stamped his heavy boot into the pool and, with a curse, sent the water spurting from the basin.
"It holds nothing!"
Doreth burst out, his face twisting in rage. Taran gasped and stumbled forward. Doreth drew his sword.
"My meal is ended, swineherd,"
Doreth cried. He struck heavily and the force of his onslaught sent Taran reeling from the cave. Gurgi yelled in fury and clutched at the warrior, who seized him with a powerful grasp and dashed him against the rocky wall. Snarling, Doreth sprang after Taran. Scrambling to his feet, Taran brought up his blade to meet the warrior's attack. Doreth spat and lunged again, driving Taran toward the slope. As the warrior bore closer upon him, Taran lost his footing, stumbled backward, and dropped to one knee. With a mocking laugh, Doreth raised his weapon, and Taran saw the blade that once had been his own glint sharply as Doreth swung it down with all his strength. Taran saw his death upon him, and flung up his sword in a last attempt to ward against the blow. The blades met with a grating, ringing clash. Taran's weapon shuddered in his hand. The shock threw him to earth. Yet his blade held. The sword of Doreth shattered on it. Cursing, Doreth flung the useless hilt at Taran's face, turned and ran to the cover of pines along the shore. Hearing her master's whistle, Doreth's sorrel mare broke from the trees. Taran sprang to pursue the fleeing warrior.
"Help! Help!"
Gurgi's voice cried from the cave.
"Kindly master! Oh, help wounded Gurgi!"
Hearing this, Taran halted, even as Doreth leapt aside his mount and galloped away. Taran raced to the cave. Within, Gurgi moaned and tried to sit up. Taran knelt quickly and saw the creature's forehead was heavily gashed, but that Gurgi's pain came more from terror than from his hurts. He carried him from the cave and propped him against a boulder. Taran did not return to the Mirror of Lunat. Already he had seen it empty, its spattered water spread over the stones, holding only the muddy print of Doreth's boot. He sank down beside Gurgi and put his head in his hands. For long, he did not move or speak. "Come," he said at last, helping Gurgi to his feet. "Come. We have far to journey." A light glowed in Anlor's hut. The night was nearly spent, yet Taran saw the potter still bent over his wheel. Anlor rose to his feet as Taran slowly crossed the threshold. Neither spoke for some while. The potter anxiously studied Taran's face and said at last, "Have you looked into the mirror, wanderer?" Taran nodded. "For a few moments. But none shall look in it again. It is destroyed." He told of Doreth and the happenings at the Lake of Lunat. When Taran had done, the potter sadly shook his head.
"You saw nothing, then?" said Anlor.
"I learned what I sought to learn," Taran replied.
"I will not question you, wanderer," said Anlor, "but if it is in your heart to tell me, I will listen."
"I saw myself," Taran answered. "In the time I watched, I saw strength and frailty, pride and vanity, courage and fear. Of wisdom, a little. Of folly, much. Of intentions, many good ones, but many more left undone. In this, alas, I saw myself a man like any other. But this, too, I saw," he went on, "alike as men may seem, each is different as flakes of snow, no two the same. You told me you had no need to seek the mirror, knowing you are Anlor Clayshaper. Now I know who I am, myself and none other.
I am Taran. Anlor did not reply immediately. Then he said,
If you have learned this, you have learned the deepest secret the mirror could tell you. Perhaps it was truly enchanted after all.
There was no enchantment, Taran answered. He smiled. It was a pool of water, the most beautiful I have seen, but a pool of water, no more than that. At first, he went on, I thought Ordu had sent a fool on a fool's errand. She did not. She meant me to see what the mirror showed me. Any stream, any river would have given me the same reflection, but I would not have understood it then as I understand it now. As for my parentage, he added, it makes little difference. True kinship has naught to do with blood ties, however strong they be. I think we are all kin, brothers and sisters one to the other, all children of all parents. And the birthright I once sought, I seek it no longer. The folk of the Free Comets taught me well, that manhood is not given, but earned. Even King Smoit in Cantref Cadifor told me this, but I did not heed him. Lonio said life was a net for luck. To Hevid the smith, life was a forge, and to Dwivak the weaver woman, a loom. They spoke truly, for it is all of these. But you, Taran said, his eyes meeting the potter's, you have shown me life is one thing more. It is clay to be shaped, as raw clay on a potter's wheel. Anlor nodded. And you, wanderer, how will you shape your clay? I cannot stay in Merin, Taran replied, much as I love it. Caer Dalban waits for me, as it has always waited. My life is there, and gladly I return to it, for I have been too long away. They sat silently then, Taran, Gurgi, and Anlor Clayshaper. As dawn lightened, Taran clasped the potter's hand and bade him farewell. Good journey to you, wanderer, called Anlor, as Taran swung astride Melinlass. Do not forget us, for we shall not forget you. I have the sword I fashioned, Taran proudly cried, the cloak I wove, and the bowl I shaped, and the friendship of those in the fairest land of Prydain. No man can find greater treasure. Melinlass pawed the ground, impatient, and Taran gave the stallion rein. Thus Taran rode from Merin, with Gurgi at his side. And as he did, it seemed he could hear voices calling to him. Remember us, remember us. He turned once, but Merin was far behind and out of sight. From the hills a wind had risen, driving the scattered leaves before it, bearing homeward to Caer Dalban. Taran followed it. This is James Langton. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged listening library production of The Prydain Chronicles, Volume 4, Taran Wanderer, by Lloyd Alexander. This program was produced and directed by John McElroy. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Text copyright, 1967, by Lloyd Alexander. Production copyright, 2004, by Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.